Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In case anyone wasn't here, today the breakfast will be at 9:45. Breakfast will be served at that time. There'll be no 10 o'clock class, and I will give my Kavya class for the first time at 11 o'clock. Text number 10. Sutta Uvacha Atma Ramashamunayo Nirgranta Apyurukrame Kurvandyahoy Tukim Bhaktim Itam bhutat bhuno harihi Suto uvacha Atma ramascha munayo Nirgranta apyurukrame Kurvandyahoy tukim bhaktim Itam bhuta guno harihi Sutta uvacha Sutta Goswami said Atma Ramaha Those who take pleasure in Atma generally spirit self Cha also Munayaha sages Nirgrantaha freed from all bondage Api in spite of Urukrame unto the great adventurer Kurvanti Do, ahoy tukim, unalloyed, bhaktim, devotional service, itambhuta, such wonderful, gunaha, qualities, harihi, of the Lord. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. All different varieties of Atma Ramas, those who take pleasure in the Atma or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. Purport. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this Atmarama Shloka very vividly before his chief devotee Srila Sanatana Goswami. He points out 11 factors in the shloka, namely 1. Atmarama, 2. Munayaha, 3. Nirgranta, 4. Api, 5. Cha, 6. Urukrama, 7. Kurvanti, 8. Hoitukim, 9. Bhaktim, 10. Itam Bhuta Gunaha, and 11. Harihi. According to the Vishwa Prakash Sanskrit dictionary, there are 7 synonyms for the word Atmarama, which are as follows. 1. Brahman, the absolute truth. 2. Body. 3. Mind, 4. Endeavor, 5. Endurance, 6. Intelligence, And 7, personal habits. That's actually the word atma. Those are the 7 synonyms of the word atma. The word munayaha refers to 1, those who are thoughtful. 2, those who are grave and silent. 3, ascetics. 4, the persistent. 5, mendicants. 6, sages. And 7, saints. Okay, Lord Chaitanya has given 64 different interpretations based on each word having various meanings. The meanings do make a difference because some people are thoughtful, but they're not saints. Some people are sages, but they're not saints, and so on. These categories are overlapping, but they're not exactly the same. And therefore, the verse can be understood in all these different ways, especially when you take the different meanings of all the different words. This is a verse with very deep meaning, so we should discuss it for a few days. Continuing, the word nirgranta conveys these ideas. 1, one who is liberated from nescience. 2, one who has no connection with scriptural injunctions. That is, who is freed from the obligations of the rules and regulations mentioned in the revealed scriptures. Like ethics, Vedas, philosophy, psychology, and metaphysics. In other words, the fools, illiterate, urchins, etc., who have no connection with the regulative principles. 3, a capitalist. And also 4, one who is penniless. That's nirgranta. According to the Shabda Kosha dictionary, the affix ni is used in the sense of, that's in nirgranta. It's actually near is the suffix. In the sense of 1, certainty, 2, counting, 3, building, and 4, forbiddance. And the word grunta is used in the sense of wealth, thesis, vocabulary, etc. The word urukama means the one whose activities are glorious. Krama means step. This word urukama specifically indicates the Lord's incarnation as Vamana, who covered the whole universe by immeasurable steps. Lord Vishnu is powerful, and his activities are so glorious that he has created the spiritual world by his internal potency and the material world by his external potency. By his all-pervading features, he is everywhere present as the Supreme Truth. And in his personal feature, he is always present in his transcendental abode of Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan, where he displays his transcendental pastimes in all variegatedness. His activities cannot be compared to anyone else's, and therefore the word urukama is just applicable to him only. Could you see if they're talking loud in the kitchen or that's outside? According to Sanskrit verbal arrangement, kurvanti refers to doing things for someone else. Well, that's the parasmaipada. Therefore, it means that the atmaramas render devotional service unto the Lord, not for personal interest, but for the pleasure of the Lord, uru kramaha. Hetu means causal. There are many causes for one's sense satisfaction, and they can be chiefly classified as material enjoyment, mystic powers, and liberation, which are generally desired by progressive persons. As far as material enjoyments are concerned, they are innumerable, and the materialists are eager to increase them more and more because they are under the illusory energy. There is no end to the list of material enjoyments, nor can anyone in the material universe have all of them. As far as the mystic powers are concerned, they are 8 in all, such as to become the minutest in form, to become weightless, to have anything one desires, to lord it over the material nature, to control other living beings, to throw earthly globes in outer space, etc. These mystic powers are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. The forms of liberation are 5 in number. Therefore, unalloyed devotion means service to the Lord without desire for the above-mentioned personal benefits. And the powerful personality of Godhead Sri Krishna can be fully satisfied by such unalloyed devotees, free from all sorts of desires for personal benefit. So that's about half the purport. We can leave the rest for tomorrow. This is Sutta's answer to the inquiry from Shonaka about how is it that Shukadeva, who was completely detached, who was absolute monist, had no interest in any duality, was interested to read a book which is made out of words, and words are expressions of duality. If I use a word, I say big, then that means not small. If I say hot, it means not cold. Every meaning of a word has its meaning by not meaning other things, by denying other things, by negation. And that's duality. In the absolute truth, there should be no duality, and therefore someone who has no other interest but the absolute truth, why would he listen to any words? Why would he study such a big book as the Bhagavatam? So, of course, by now, Shonaka and the other sages, having heard so much already from Sutta Goswami in this Purana and all the other Puranas, they should understand that the absolute truth is Nirguna, but he has his transcendental qualities. And therefore, the scriptures can describe all his transcendental qualities. No problem. So that is, just for our benefit, Sutta Goswami is telling us that again. The Supreme Lord has such wonderful spiritual qualities that everybody should be attracted to him. Almost everybody. The materialists should have some interest in Krishna. They are interested in attracting all the girls and enjoying them. Well, Krishna is the biggest enjoyer of all the girls. You want to learn how to do that, learn it from Krishna. So the materialists should have their interest. Those who are materialists who want to defeat enemies, look at how many enemies Krishna easily defeated. At all odds, outnumbered, he managed to defeat so many enemies. So if that's your interest, you can see how the example of Krishna. Then the materialist can be attracted to Krishna. The impersonalist can be attracted to Krishna because he is the absolute truth. Even if they want to go beyond the personality, they find the personality useful. It's not that Mayavadis in the school of Shankara, the Buddhists are one thing, but the Mayavadis in the school of Shankara are not denying the personal feature of the Supreme. Buddhists are, but they're just ignoring the personality of God. They recognize demigods, but they don't recognize any Supreme Person. But the Advaitavadis accept there's a Supreme Person. Shankaracharya says, Narayano Paro Vyaktat. Narayan is not a material thing. He's beyond even the pradhan, the unmanifested material nature. What to speak of all the duality existing in nature? So, and the Mayavadis have use for the concept of the Supreme Person, but they relativize him. The Supreme Truth is Saguna Brahman, as the word came up today in Kapila Dev's last instructions. He has qualities, so therefore he's duality, he's illusion. But he's the supreme illusion, according to the Mayavadis. And therefore it's very useful to meditate on and worship him. Useful as a step toward perfection of impersonal realization. But that's relativizing and exploiting the Supreme Lord, not serving him, but using him for your purposes. And you discard him when you're done. To the Mayavadis, they worship the deity, but then they throw it away when they're done. They worship the spiritual master with great pomp, but when they're done with him, they throw him away. There's an incident in Mayapur that I heard about that Bhavananda Maharaj was helping Prabhupada onto the road outside the Mayapur property, walking over a dike in the rice paddy, where there was a lifted part of land, of ground that had to be walked over. So Bhavananda gave Prabhupada his hand and helped him climb over. And then Prabhupada, when they got to the other side onto the road, Prabhupada pushed him away. And he said, I don't need you any longer. Just like the Mayavadis. They use the guru to attain their perfection, and then they throw him away, and sometimes they even kill their guru. So the Supreme Lord, even the spiritual master, are just to be used to achieve your selfish goals. That's really the mentality of the Mayavadis. Even they, though, are attracted to Krishna because he's useful for them. Meditating on him is useful for them. And when they want to attract followers to become their disciples, they advertise themselves as Vaishnavas because everyone's attracted to Krishna. So they advertise themselves as devotees to attract people who are also attracted to Krishna for their own selfish purposes again. And then there are the devotees who are genuinely attracted to Krishna. Not so that they can use him, but so that he can use them. This is the difference of the attitude of a Vaishnava, a devotee, and a non-devotee. A real devotee wants Krishna to be happy more than his own happiness. And therefore, he wants Krishna to use him. He doesn't want to use Krishna for what he thinks will make him happy. Krishna, you use me for whatever you think will make you happy. And whatever crumbs of happiness you can throw at me, I'll accept them. All of these persons are attracted by Krishna. Not because he's nothing, because he's something. Itam bhuta guno harihi. Because he has such wonderful qualities, therefore he attracts almost everybody. We've got a few devotees falling asleep. Please get more sleep. Go to sleep earlier. Okay. Parikshit, at the beginning of the 10th canto, asks a question. It's a rhetorical question because he gives the answer. If you ask a question, you already know the answer. It's called a rhetorical question. Especially if you give the answer in your question. And he does. The Vrittatar Shire Upagiya Manat Bhavau Shadat Trotamano Biramat Kautama Shloka Gunanu Vadat Puman Virajeta Vina Pashugnat. Who can fail to become attached? Virajite. A virajita. So virajita means viraga. Become detached. Well, isn't becoming detached good? In general, but not when it comes to Krishna and his devotees. Sangas teshu pati pratya. Sangha dosha harahite. You should become attached to the devotees because by being attached to them, you'll become detached from everything else and you'll become attached to Krishna. And when you're attached to Krishna, then all your attachments are finished, material attachments. So one should become attached to Krishna and to his devotees. So who, the question then is, who can fail to become attracted to Lord Hari after simply hearing the glories of his qualities? Uttama shloka guna anuvadat. Hearing properly, anuvada. Anu can mean a few things. mean hearing from authority, hearing afterwards, after something else. First you wash your hands and then you sit down and listen, you know, after something else. Or it can mean just properly, following the proper procedure. So there's a proper procedure of hearing Krishna's qualities. And a very important part of the procedure is hearing it from the right person who is a devotee of Krishna and can properly represent Krishna and properly describe him. Don't hear from a Mayavadi. Better not to hear from a materialist. Hear from a devotee. And the purer the devotee is, the more effective the hearing will be. So, after such proper hearing, when you've actually heard the qualities of Krishna described by a devotee, who can fail to become attracted to Krishna? And the answer is given. I won't describe all the qualifications of Krishna in that verse, to keep it short, but the answer that Pariksit himself gives, Vinapashugnat, who except for a pashugna? And that word also has several meanings. Killer of pashu. Gna means killer. But you can have physical killing, and you can have spiritual killing, and you can have metaphorical killing. You can kill someone's enthusiasm, but you haven't really killed it once and for all. It can come back again, come back to life. So it's not literal killing. If you kill someone's enthusiasm, it's temporary killing. That's metaphorical killing. And there's physical killing. I do something to you that makes your heart stop beating and you have to leave this body. That's physical killing. Or there is spiritual killing. I speak such impersonal nonsense that it ruins all your opportunity for any spiritual life. That's spiritual murder. There's different kinds of killing. And then there's also samobitstva, suicide. You can kill yourself in all three ways. So you have maybe six different kinds of killing. Three different kinds, and whether you do it to someone else or to yourself. Atmanepana and parasmaipana. Whether you kill yourself or kill somebody else. Of course, you can do both. The Mayavadis managed to do both. Even materialists, according to our strict standard, the materialists are killing themselves. According to Narottam Das Thakur, those who drink of the poison bottles of Karmakanda and Gyanakanda, they're committing suicide. Nanayona Shadapini. But it's multiple suicide. You're not killing yourself just once, as you would if you drank a simple bottle of cyanide. But by drinking Karmakanda poison or Gyanakanda poison, you have to die over and over again, take repeated births. That's certainly suicide also. So all these people, the Mayavadis who think they're God, and especially the ones who tell other people that they're God also, the people who literally are meat eaters, they're literally killing pashus, innocent creatures. That's the most literal meaning is a meat eater. Meat eater. So basically meat eaters can't become very Krishna conscious until they stop eating meat. And then there's, let's say, metaphorical killing yourself by becoming a materialist. So these people, especially though, the impersonalists and the meat eaters, and let's say also people who take intoxication, illicit intoxication, they're killing their subtle bodies. So these are all pashugna. These are the only people who can't be attracted to Krishna. Of course, unfortunately, we're living in such an age that most everybody fits into one of these categories. Almost everybody's a pashugna. In this advanced stage of Kali Yuga, uncivilized, cat and dog civilization where almost everybody is killing other creatures, killing themselves on all three levels, physically, spiritually, and metaphorically. But if you find anybody who's not pashugna, who's not killing himself or somebody else, then he should There's no reason why he shouldn't become attracted just by hearing about Krishna's qualities. Ittam Bhuta Gano Harihi. Atmaramas, the Atmaramas, certainly are attracted to Krishna. Atmarama, we have all these different meanings. It can mean the impersonalist sages. That's how we normally understand the word Atmarama, self-satisfied. But Atma can mean several things. So those who are satisfied, because you have Paramatma, and Krishna is the Parama Paramatma. So if you're satisfied in Krishna, that's one thing. If you're satisfied in the Supersoul, that's another thing. If you're satisfied in yourself with an impersonal conception, that's another thing. And if you think you're this body and you're satisfied with your bodily existence, that's another kind of Atmarama. All of these people, why shouldn't they be attracted to Krishna? Because he has such wonderful qualities. That basically is what Sutta is talking about here. I didn't give 64 meanings. I just gave a few. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Working.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is it clearly explained how to interpret these 64 meanings?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave more than once. Once to, was it Sanatana Goswami or Rupa Goswami? And once to Prakashananda Saraswati, each one. Sarvabhauma and to Sanatana. Sarvabhauma and Sanatana. Two different explanations. Basically the same explanation, but he gave it twice. That should be clear enough, and Prabhupada has given his purports. If you need more clarification, you can ask somebody.
I mean, is it... Okay, this is...
No, he doesn't... Actually, you don't see... It could be analyzed even more thoroughly. Some of it is in brief summary. Well, all 64 meanings are mentioned, but it's not a thorough explanation of each one.
Like grammatically, how they fit, that will have to be done by...
Yes, someone. Yes.
And it seems that if you give like seven meanings to one word, then another word, another seven meanings...
You get more than 64.
Yeah.
But some of them don't match up with the others. Definitely. Yeah, so it's less than a total permutation. Because some of them... Some of the combinations don't make sense. And some of them don't mean anything different than the other ones. Some of them are duplicates. You have two different combinations of seven meanings of each of the 11 words, whatever it is. Some of the words have different number of meanings, but you have all these meanings times all the 11 words. But some of the combinations end up meaning the same thing. So, and then some of them don't make sense, so you're left with less than the total possibility. And Lord Chaitanya was satisfied to pick out 64 meanings. Sure. Vishnu Kantapur.
So we see even the other verses, Acharyas give, they interpret different meanings as different words.
Yes.
And they come and combine to form like multiple meanings. In the first verse of Bhagavatam, Vishwanath Chakravarti gives fivefold meanings.
Yes.
And in 10 canto, so many times it happens, like each verse. So does it mean that like each verse in Bhagavatam has, if we very deeply analyze the meaning of each word and then by different permutation combination, we get several multiple meanings? Like at least most of the verses in Bhagavatam?
You could. If you dig deep enough, you could find multiple meaning in almost any verse in the Bhagavatam. Almost any verse. Some verses have more rich, deep, double meanings, triple meanings than other verses. But basically, Bhagavatam is not a shallow book. It does contain a lot of extra meanings. Especially since the audience is varied. It's not for a single narrow targeted audience. It's for new devotees who still have material problems, and therefore the Bhagavatam is for them is focusing on how to get free from those problems. Teaching renunciation and practical basic facts of devotional service. But the same Bhagavatam is serving the needs of the advanced devotees and the perfect devotees. So every statement of the Bhagavatam will be read differently by each of these three kinds of devotees, and they're just the three basic kinds. There are all sorts of subdivisions. And each devotee will see the Bhagavatam in a different light, see the same verses. Even apart from the words having different meanings, but words have meanings, they also have emotional values and connotations. Those are unlimited. Yeah, when I read that Krishna couldn't pay back the gopis and he said you'll have to be satisfied with your own, you know, your own good deeds. That means something, maybe a little bit of something to me. But what it means to a devotee who actually can taste the love of the gopis, it means quite a bit a different thing. And that's not just a matter of different dictionary meanings. That's a matter of personal realization. So according to realization, you're going to understand differently the Bhagavatam. The real meaning is on the level of rasa. It's not just ideas, it's feelings. Actual attraction to Krishna and his devotional service. I can understand the words to mean exactly the same as the best scholar, as the best devotee. But he, when he hears it, he's involuntarily immersed in ecstasy. And I hear it, I understand what the words mean, and it still goes in one ear and out the other, with not much attraction. So that's definitely different kinds of hearing, although it doesn't have to do just with the meaning of the words.
So that means that, each word has three different meanings, like suggestive and figurative, like that. So
no. It's not true that every word has suggestion. Only some words have suggestion. Even in poetry, it's not that every single word in a poem will have suggestion. If a suggestion is a relatively rare thing. One suggestion in a whole verse is enough to qualify it as poetry. It would be quite rare that every single word is suggesting. That would be very, very heavy poetry. It's possible.
Can we say in Bhagavatam, multiple suggestions are there in each one?
There are multiple suggestions, but I wouldn't say that every single word has the word cha, you know, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were born as the sons of Aditi. Which one? Gore, your phone is on my desk. I mean, what's the poetic suggestion of the word cha, saying Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha? It's just serving its literal purpose and nothing else. So some words are not going to have deep poetic significance, obviously. That doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter that, some chapters in the Bhagavatam are just telling genealogy of people we don't even care about. That's okay. It's part of the body, the substance of the Bhagavatam. Your body has a heart and a stomach, and that's what you care about, especially your stomach. Your tongue and your stomach is what you're really interested in. But you have all this other connecting tissue, which you don't even know about. You know, tendons and fat deposits and just membranes. They're also important. So like that, you have connecting tissue in the Bhagavatam. Some chapters even that don't seem so important, but it's part of the whole.
So I was thinking of another meaning of this word.
Okay, go ahead.
This word Atmarama can also refer to Lord himself.
Which word?
Atmarama.
Yes.
So Lord himself, like we see Lord Chaitanya, he is Lord himself, he performed devotion to Lord Hari. So can this verse mean refer to Lord Chaitanya who
you mean that Krishna himself is Atmarama?
Yeah.
Yeah, even Lord Chaitanya, even Krishna is attracted to his own qualities. If Krishna is attracted to them, why shouldn't we be? If they're so great that he attracts even him, then why are we not attracted? Sure. Okay, anything else? Yes, Mother.
The true, if the Mayavadis throw their guru, then why do they worship Shankaracharya?
Why do they?
Worship Shankaracharya as a
guru. Well, they don't always throw the guru away. If they threw Shankaracharya away, they wouldn't have a sampradaya. So they have a use. You know, we got our sampradaya. We're important. You know, so they want Shankaracharya to be the big man because they're parasites of his power. You know, they're using his power to make themselves powerful. So therefore, they don't want to disempower him. You know, you glorify, very materialists will glorify him. They're not materialists, but we're putting him, you know, they're following the same pattern. Materialists will glorify an important man for their own purposes. As long as it's for their purpose, they'll glorify him. And when he doesn't serve a purpose for them anymore, then they'll vilify him. So the Mayavadis have plenty of good reason to want to worship Shankaracharya for their own purposes. But the guru, when you don't have any use for your guru, then you can kick him out. Because there's only one supreme. We don't need a separate entity, guru or anything else, ultimately. For the Vaishnav, the guru is always your guru, even after liberation. Even in Goloka, you have to approach Krishna through your guru. That's the etiquette. Krishna may give you direct access, but as far as you're concerned, you don't dare to approach Krishna without going through your guru. Yes. And then, follow up? Yeah.
You were explaining how different class of people will be attracted to the Lord. Like even the meat eaters and materialists and Mayavadis. Mayavadis are attracted for their own purposes like this. But how we can understand that these contaminated people, I mean these varieties of class of people, will perform ahetuki bhakti, that is, without any cause they will perform bhakti. Because they each of them have some selfish purpose behind performing bhakti.
I don't know. That's a good question. We could look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita to see what Lord Chaitanya said, how he explained that. How, if the Atmaramas are materialists, what kind of ahoituki bhakti are they performing? I don't know. See if something said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
So there, should we interpret hetu as in a different meaning?
Yeah. Hetu also has different meanings. Of course it has different meanings. Even in grammar it has several meanings. Hetuka can also mean useless. Yeah. Whatever. You know, or hetu can be the final goal. And the, you know, they're performing devotional service, but they're not aiming at the final goal. You could call that a hetuka. They're aiming at something inferior. They're performing devotional service for an inferior purpose, just for material things. You can call that a haituki bhakti. I'm just concocting here. You can look and see what Lord Chaitanya said about it. Okay. Sorry, Kipu.
So you go to this verse and Nirmita Tasha Pugay Manas and so on. So Vinapashugnat, that all those people who are under this six categories which don't become attracted to Krishna. Yes. So what are the chances to become attracted to Krishna? What is the good fortune?
The good fortune for the unqualified persons who on their own would never be successful in gaining Krishna's mercy. Their only good fortune is if they can get the mercy of very powerful, pure devotees. A devotee who's powerful enough and pure enough, he can deliver even the most undeliverable person, even Mayavadis. So, to give the best hope to the people in this world today, we should give them Prabhupada's association. That's their best hope. You can try something else, but that's the best hope. You give someone else's association, you give your own association, you can do other things. Best thing is connected with Prabhupada. That's the best hope for everybody in this world.
And in our cases, for example, myself or devotee, we may also practice Krishna consciousness for some time, but still we may feel that we don't become attached to Krishna to attracted to his qualities. So what is our chance? What we can do in this case?
Well, it's a lot easier for us because we're already engaged and we're already trying and we're probably doing better than we think we're doing. Same thing, though. We should become... We should be more connected with Prabhupada. You can connect yourself with somebody or something else. You can decide to practice astrology and check your chart every morning before you wake up. Become attached to that. Or become attached to some other person than Prabhupada, who's not really Prabhupada's representative, somebody else. But I would recommend, if you are not fully satisfied with your success so far in devotional service, try to find out how to become more connected with Prabhupada. And you can inquire from those who seem to be connected with Prabhupada more about how to do that.
It means that we have to take shelter of our spiritual master's instructions who brings us towards Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet.
That is essential, but also we can take help from other devotees. We can take help from our own intelligence. We can take help from the books. Various sources. Yes, first our own spiritual master, but then there's others we can take shelter of. Guru Shastra Sadhu. Guru Shastra Sadhu can help us become more connected with Prabhupada.
You mentioned how a great devotee can deliver all kinds of people. So we understand that a pure devotee is the cause for somebody's bhakti. So is that, so the cause of bhakti is a pure devotee?
Well, that was suggested. The discussion of what is the cause of bhakti was investigated by Vishnu Chakravarti in the Madhurya Kadambini. And that was one suggestion. And he doesn't deny it. Yes, it looks like the devotee is giving bhakti. But the devotee is only delivering bhakti. Bhakti is independent. Bhakti gives herself. Bhakti chooses to descend when she wants to descend. And the devotee is the person who delivers. So really you should trace it back that bhakti is its own cause, doesn't have any other cause. Yeah.
What about agyatas, sukriti, that is also,
did I discuss it with you or someone else the other day? I don't think you can really say that agyata sukriti is the cause of devotional service. Because that's just karma. Karma can't be the cause of bhakti. If it was, then the astrologer would be able to pick out who's going to become a devotee and who isn't. And an astrologer can't. Because a devotional service is not caused by any karma, sukrita or dushkrita. Again, devotional service gives herself to whoever she chooses to give herself to. Sukrita, dushkrita. So I would suggest that we should look at agyata sukriti as not the actual cause, not at what we call karaka hetu. But something to actually make something else happen. They're just a gyapaka hetu. That's a sign by which you can see that it's coming. A gyapaka hetu is a reason for knowing something. Just like when you see the sky turning pink, you know the sunrise is coming. But the pink color doesn't cause the sunrise. It just lets you know. It's a gyapaka hetu rather than a karaka hetu. So I would take agyata sukriti like that. It's a symptom, a sign in somebody that lets you know that devotional service is getting ripe for devotional service. It predisposes him, but it's not the actual cause.
I was hearing an explanation that's on this.
Okay.
Yes. I'll tell you to repeat it in the bedroom, okay?
Yes, go ahead.
I was hearing an explanation on this, and the devotee was, seems it was quoting from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there is a Sukriti, Bhakti Sukriti, and ritual Sukriti.
If you're doing some little bit of devotional service,
so
is the beginning of devotional service.
So that's what you...
You could understand a Gyata Sukriti in that sense, yes.
It's like, I'm on Sankirtan, and I drop some money, and then the person comes up and gives the money back, you know, to help Sri Krishna. He doesn't know.
He doesn't know he's doing devotional service. He's just trying to be good.
So that builds up to the point that he engaged in full devotional service.
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay. Or a brahmana who does the sacrifice, he's only interested in the fruits and he's only paying attention to the demigods. But the Vedic sacrifice is worship of Vishnu. He's doing some trace of devotion just by doing the sacrifice, even with no Krishna consciousness. It's Krishna's subconsciousness. So that's also a Gyata Sukriti in that sense.
And how does it work? Bhakti, she's just there and she's looking, oh, I'll give my mercy to this person and I'll give my mercy to that person. That like that? If it's costless, then... Bhakti just...
But she also listens to the devotee's recommendations.
Oh, but still she has to make her own choice. She's not bound. It's like...
She chooses. Nobody can force her.
It's a little bit like the Karma Mimamsa. The Karma Mimamsa, they say...
Krishna said, why worship Indra? He and the other demigods have to reciprocate with your karma. They're forced to.
So like that, we cannot impose something like that on Bhakti. No, you must manifest in this person because... No.
No way.
Okay. Thank you.
Bhakti is independent. Okay.
You mentioned pure and powerful devotee. What does the powerful there mean?
Krishna has given him special shakti to be able to uplift and deliver other people. It's a special shakti. Someone can be a pure devotee, but not empowered to help anybody else. Krishna just gives him the power to help himself. And some other devotee he empowers to help other people. So it's a special shakti. It's not given to everybody, not to all devotees. Purity is the force. Well, okay, but that's a sort of poetic statement. The purity and power to preach are not necessarily always coincidental. You can have a perfectly pure devotee who's not a preacher. You can have. And you can have a preacher who's not so pure, too. But anyway, there are two different things. So I think I was okay in mentioning them separately. A potent, pure devotee. Anyway, the two different ideas, at least, even though they're usually together. You know, if I say a big blue lotus, okay, it's the same lotus, but it's two significant ideas. It's blue and it's also big. Because, you know, that's two different things to think about, even though it's the same lotus. So even if the same devotee is pure and potent, they are two different ideas, at least. Okay. Yes, last question. You want to ask me. Last two questions. Damodar first. Yeah? I'm sorry? Okay, three questions.
Just a confirmation of...
Four questions.
Just confirmations. Like, so then we understand that Bhakti Devi, when a pure devotee requests, Bhakti Devi is generally inclined to give mercy to...
But she doesn't have to.
Okay.
And she can also do it all on her own if she wants to.
But it always manifests through a pure devotee, isn't it? Even if she wants, or can she do it? She can do it.
Yeah, there's always a devotee involved.
Okay.
Yeah. Bhakti will inspire a devotee to act on her behalf.
Or the devotee may request Bhakti Devi and then...
Yeah, both ways. There's two-way communication. The Bhakti tells the devotee to do something, and the devotee requests Bhakti to do something, both. Okay, let's work this direction.
the difference between costless devotion service and an unalloyed devotion service?
It should be the same. Unalloyed means no mixture, but what do you mix in devotional service? It's not that, you know, sweet rice is ruined if you put some sand in it. But if I throw some sand at you, it doesn't ruin your devotional service. So sand is okay. Even tin and copper are okay. They don't ruin devotional service. But material intention, material purposes, they do ruin devotional service. So that's the mixture that makes a difference, is the mixture of... because the thing is, it's not that devotional service has to be free from everything material. You can't touch money, you can't talk to people, you can't open your eyes. No, it's not like that unalloyed. It means it can't have any selfish purposes. Selfish purposes is what spoils the bhakti. So it means unalloyed with those, unmixed with those, selfish purposes. So then that means the same thing as a hoituki. No selfish purposes.
Because costless can be in both directions, before and after. Like it had no cost, and then costlessly something is performed, so just nothing is expected.
Several meanings. Cause can mean, hetu can mean cause and purpose. You know, the cause comes before, the purpose comes after. Hetu means both. And also, I don't have a hetu, and Krishna doesn't have a hetu. I don't have any selfish purpose, and Krishna, who I'm reciprocating with in devotion, he doesn't have any selfish purpose either. So you have multiple meanings of hetu.
So all those multiple meanings are there in unalloyed, this word also, or it's contextually?
Yeah, yeah. Causes devotional service means I'm not trying to accomplish anything by it, and there wasn't any karmic, organic prerequisite that I was required to attain first. It's causes in that sense. It's causeless in the sense that I don't have any selfish ambition. And it's causeless in the sense that Krishna is not trying to exploit me either. He doesn't have any selfish purposes. Causeless in all those senses. And that's the same as unalloyed. Pure devotional service. 100% pure devotional service. Nothing else. No karma, no jnana. Okay. Damodar and then Sarvakya.
It's a short question. Purity and pure and potent, but you cannot be potent without being pure first.
No, Krishna can empower someone who's not pure.
Okay.
Just like demons who participate in his pastimes, materialistic devotees who Krishna, who people, devotees like Prabhupada, who can engage them in useful service even though they're materialistic. So an impure person, a person who's not completely pure, can be potent if Krishna arranges it. But I'm talking about, you know, we have to find the devotee who's both pure and potent.
It's about Geta Sukrisi. I've just heard recently from the lecture of my spiritual master. He quoted from Bhakti Tata Viveka. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he explains those four categories of pious people: Jana, Sukrisi, Narjuna. So who become qualified, and he tells that he gives a very nice definition of Agata Sukriti. It comes from Shiljiva Goswami's Sandarpas. There's this activity in connection with transcendental personality which gives rise a very intense, unflinching desire to satisfy Krishna. Activity in connection with transcendental personalities which gives rise a very intense, unflinching desire to satisfy Krishna.
Oh, and, okay. That's
Agnya Sukriti. And he lists that this transcendental personality is either pure devotee of Krishna's pure devotee or Krishna himself. And he gives in both in all those four cases of like Gajendra, he was in distress and then he started to pray these prayers which came from his past life, and because of those prayers he connected with Krishna. Krishna came and he gave up his desire to become free from suffering, and only at that point he became qualified to perform devotional service. And also Dhruva Maharaj, he got association of Narada Muni, and by following his instructions he got association of Krishna himself, and by that contact he gave up all his ulterior motives and he became qualified for pure devotional service. So
he has very good examples. And I'm sorry, who said that?
It's from Bhaktivinoda Viveka of
Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, that's a very good explanation. Thank you. And we have to stop now. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.